Back in the booth, back on the airwaves, coming at you live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. John Reed, Cam Black, Hayden Wall, and intern Draven. For the next 3 hours, we'll talk sports and other things as we come in on this Wednesday, September 16th. A lot to talk about for a Wednesday, I guess. Obviously, the NFL rolling along. We got some new injury news to get to. College football. Got a boring weekend coming, but the weekends in October and November and maybe December get a little bit more exciting as the Big Ten makes their announcement. It was a poorly kept secret. We just kept waiting on them to finally pull the trigger. But finally, they say, okay, we're coming back. You guys win. The whole thing we tried to do didn't work. But now they're getting praise for, wow, just really good job by the Big Ten in terms of like, you know, waiting to get all the data and just waiting an extra month, and now they'll be ready to go. And then we had two really, really interesting, fun games in the NBA last night. Before we get started, Hayden, how are you today? Thumbs up from Hayden. Cameron?
I'm doing good. And like you said, good NBA action last night. I love when NFL's back because it kind of speeds up the week, too. Because, like, Monday you get football game. Tuesday you talk about the football game. And then Wednesday you're like, oh, we got football tomorrow. So I love how it just kind of speeds the week up for me. So,
well, see, for me it always still means that Wednesdays suck. But the NBA, as you know, being in the middle of the week, mm-hmm. and that's allowed to help. And, you know, baseball will eventually start trying to fill some of that weekday void as well. And so the Wednesdays are going to be a little less stinky, although I still dread them. I hate Wednesdays during football season. But like I said, we had some good basketball last night. We got some big news coming out today. Usually Wednesday is like where you start trying to really try to scrape the bottom of the barrel for talking points. But I don't think that'll be a concern this year with everything going on. And with, you know, any given day, it feels like this college football season and NFL season could go from on to off.
Yep.
I still haven't gotten over that feeling. And, you know, the Big Ten says it's back. And then the Big Ten, you know, put some stipulations in their plan that made me think, okay, well, this could get kind of derailed at any moment. They're trying to put the language in there that makes it seem like they are really, really being careful. Like they have kind of what I asked the SEC to do, which was we kind of tried to lay out in the Big Ten what was going to be required of teams to be halted.
Mm-hmm.
We got some actual numbers there. Like the Big Ten's like, okay, yeah, we're coming back. We're going to give, we're basically going to have an eight-week schedule. We're going to run through, play. I guess that means, do they just try to do like the original conference schedule? How many games? I guess they play more than that in the Big Ten. What do they play? 9 games usually? So I guess they're going to come out with their schedule later today. But they're going to try to do 8 games in 8 weeks starting the weekend of October 23rd. And then they say, well, hey, we might even let you play a 9th game on conference championship Saturday. Like, as 1 versus 2 is happening, we might let, like, 3 play 4.
Mm-hmm.
5 play 6. Give you a chance for a 9th game on conference championship Saturday. They didn't leave themselves with a lot of wiggle room, though. Because December 19th is the deadline, Cam. They said they have to have their conference title game done by them because the college football playoff committee gets together on the 20th to make their selection. And, of course, a big part of the reason you want to have this season is so that you can have a chance to win a national championship. We talked about it. Like, the Big Ten has 1.5 national championships like the last, like, 40, 50 years, something crazy like that. They got Ohio State's. Mm-hmm. I guess Ohio State's got 2. Ohio State's got 2. And then outside of that, Michigan got 1 split. And that's been about it for the Big Ten.
Yeah, we wouldn't be missing them a ton, but they want to be in there. they want a shot.
We're missing Ohio State. Like I think for the credibility of the season, Ohio State needs to be there in terms of crowning a champion. They do seem like they have a championship roster. They have one of the more exciting players in the country in Justin Fields. So personally, I'm glad the Big Ten's back. I don't know if I would have missed them when the season actually got rolling. I missed them the last couple weeks, but once the SEC started playing, would I have cared that the Big Ten wasn't here? I don't know. Probably not. But either way, it'll be nice to see Ohio State. It'll be nice to laugh at Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
See what James Franklin can do. That'll be fun. It adds things to watch. It adds things to talk about. So I'm with it. It is funny to see the backtracking though from the journalist that was like, ha ha ha, look at the dumb rednecks in the South. Man, they love football more than anything. They're willing to die and kill all these boys for football. And now the Big Ten's like, okay, yeah, let's do football too, guys. We're sorry. Which we're still waiting for the Pac-12. What the hell have they said? Have they said anything?
I haven't seen anything recently. I think they're just kind of saying, hoping nobody notices they're not playing. I think that's what they're going for here.
USC was trying yesterday to be like, hey, we really want to play. Can we play? The statement I saw was basically like, hey, we can't play right now. They put out a statement. Commissioner Larry Scott said, at this time, our universities in California and Oregon do not have approval from state or local health public officials to start contact practice. We are hopeful that our new daily testing capability can help satisfy public health approvals in California and Oregon to begin competition. We are equally closely monitoring the devastating fires and air quality throughout our region at this time. So basically, we'll try to do this at some point, but, when you think about the downtime you need to get going, right? Because the Big Ten's basically like, hey, we got to get in here and practice.
Mm-hmm.
We got to get in here and start hitting each other. We haven't really been doing that. We've been practicing but not contact practicing. So we got to start doing this. And they're like, hey, by the 30th, we'll start testing everybody daily. So for the Pac-12 to not even get that ball rolling makes me think that they're not playing football this year.
Yeah, at least not in time, for playoffs or anything. That's a guarantee.
And I hope, at the very least, this is kind of the last blow for the keep politics out of sports people, because we had the literal president of the United States trying hard to get the Big Ten on the field.
Yep.
No coincidence. A lot of swing states up there, states he needs to win, and he tried to make a lot of people up there happy by giving them their football. And is it on the internet taking credit for it and saying, I'm proud to have served a big part in this. Which, good for him. I said, I'm happy to have Big Ten football back. It's the second best conference in the country. Especially after what happened last weekend, Cam. Just get the Big 12 out of my face forever. I don't want to watch any of those games. Get the Big 12 out of my face forever. No, thank you.
Yeah, I'm ranking the Sun Belt above the Big 12. Yeah. They earned it.
Give me the Sun Belt. Give me Cincinnati versus Memphis. Do something else. Just don't make me watch Big 12 football anymore. Oklahoma, we'll see you in the playoff, I guess, maybe. Or we'll wait till you play Texas. I'll watch that game. But outside of that, I don't want to watch any Big 12 football. Get out of my face forever. So thank you, Big Ten, for coming back. But again, the politics and sports thing is really funny, and I hope we can quit pretending sports and politics don't always mix, because, again, you had the president 2 months before an election really trying hard to make a lot of people happy in some important states. But the Pac-12 put out a statement basically it doesn't seem like we're going to get this done. But the Big Ten is back.
Welcome back, Big Ten.
In October. Unless, they put some things in there that is if we get above, I believe it's 5%, 5% team rate, if your team has 5% positive tests, which let's just say you have 100 people on there.
Mm-hmm.
Five tests seem not that hard to test positive on a college campus. That seems like that would be hard. And at that point, you have to pause practice and competition for at least 7 days. So, with no bye weeks worked in, Cam, if a team has five players, roughly 5% test positive, that could shut everything down for a whole game week. They also are relying on the cities. The cities have to stay below 7.5% positivity rate. Which you can do math on whatever your city population is. You got to make sure there's no outbreaks there.
Yeah.
And then if a player tests positive, this is crazy to me, they have to sit out no fewer than 21 days, 3 weeks.
Oh, man.
3 weeks for a positive test. Like, we're going crazy here about our contact tracing and our positive test. They are doing 21 days if you test positive. So that could basically knock you out of a whole month of football. But the Big Ten's back. We'll continue talking about that throughout the show. I want to get to these NBA games because, man, that was good content. We'll dive into that next. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. I got to say, I'm happy that the Big Ten's back. It'll make October and November better, but it also makes September 16th better because we got one of the best tweets of all time. Please hang this tweet in the Twitter Hall of Fame, whatever the equivalent is of a Louvre. That's the name of that museum, right? The Louvre?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't
the art museum?
I got a little
I don't
nervous.
Think you say the V in the word. I think just the Lou.
The Lou?
Yeah.
You lost in trivia. I'm not listening to you. So hang this one in the equivalent of the Louvre from David Hookstead, who is a blue check guy. He's like a reporter somewhere in Big Ten country. But he came through. He came through as the star of the internet so far today. I've spent the past 188 days fighting to save Big Ten football. Today we accomplished the mission, much like the Osama bin Laden raid or D-Day. You never know when your number will be called to serve. All I hope, all you hope for is to execute your job and the mission. We did just that. Round of applause for David Hookstead.
What
Much
service?
Like the Osama bin Laden raid or D-Day, you never know when your number will be called to serve. All you hope for is to execute your job and the mission. We did just that. Thank you, David Hookstead, for your service.
What a hero.
You will go down. I mean, do you really know the name of the guy who shot Osama bin Laden?
Oh, I saw it the other day.
He popped up the other day. Like, he was on, like, a radio show.
Yeah.
But, like, do you know his name?
No.
You don't? Which, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a thing for protection. Like, maybe it's one of those things, like, there were more than one person that went in there to, like, handle the job, right? So, like, maybe you don't want to know the one guy's name who just got to pull the trigger because, I mean, it was a team effort and it went into a lot and whatever. You don't know his name.
Sometimes heroes need a secret identity.
Not if you're David Hookstead. We're going to know his name. He's going down in history as the man who saved Big Ten football. Nameless Osama bin Laden shooter here. Okay. David Hookstead up here. We did just that. What a tweet.
It's crazy because on the other end of the spectrum, there's a lady from USA Today that's like, this is the darkest day in Big Ten history.
Okay, and what's her name?
Her name is Christine Brennan.
Okay, welcome to the program, Christine Brennan. You are right, Cam. She deserves equal airtime.
Somebody quote tweeted it and said, you were going to freak out when you Google Jerry Sandusky and Larry Nassar.
Well, there is that. If I'm thinking darkest days of Big Ten football history, I would say the legendary Joe Paterno being linked with his program and Jerry Sandusky to raping boys, little boys, for the duration of like 30 years.
Yeah.
I would say that's a little bit darker than let's try to play some football during a pandemic that hasn't really killed any college-age kids.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
Just if you're giving me the option, behind door number one, I watch football during a pandemic with some of these guys putting their bodies on the line and their health, versus door number two, decades of child abuse and child rape, which is worse, which is darker for the Big Ten. Give me door number two as darker.
There are not even any lights on in there.
That is pitch black. That is like the movie The Descent, where they're down in a cave. No light whatsoever. That's how dark it is. That's a little bit worse. Nay, that's a lot worse. We didn't get to door number three like, yeah, Larry Nassar.
Yeah.
Whatever the hell Michigan State's been doing the last 15 to 20 years, however long that went. When you have Larry Nassar, who is associated with, you know, Michigan State, and you have Michigan State's, you know, bosses or the people helping run Michigan State, when you have them all getting subpoenaed to a federal court for, you know, a Team USA sex scandal, that also seems worse than let's play some football.
Yeah. Yeah. She may, Christine may be stretching a little bit here, but.
Who's going to get ratioed more? Because, like, I think that there's a chance, right? There's a small chance that David Hookstead is joking, right? That he's like, hey, I just want some attention. I feel like I've seen this guy have a viral tweet before. He just says some wild stuff, maybe. There's a chance he's joking. I do not think there's any chance that Christine is joking.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
Christine is not joking.
She, oh my gosh.
Can you give me an update on her ratio, please?
Oh, geez, which one? Let me see. Yeah, she's getting ratioed quite heavily right now. She has 125 retweets, 330 favorites, and 1,005 replies on this one tweet.
That's pretty bad.
Posting her article about how the Big Ten became the SEC, and it choked, and it scared, and it sold its soul for football.
Well, what about the one where she says it's the darkest day in Big Ten history? Because I feel like that's the one that's going to get more attention.
Actually,
saying, hey, Jerry Sandusky.
That one actually only has 329 replies to 15 retweets, 60 likes.
I feel like that's a worse ratio.
When you
look at it, I mean, it's not doing the volume, though. Well, so far, David Hookstead has 290 likes on his tweet. He has 1.6 thousand retweets. However, 1,500 of those are quote tweets, which means that they are not agreeing with him. They are not saying, hey, we agree. They're saying, look at this dumbass.
Christine actually stepped it up. She compared it.
820 replies, by the way.
Oh, okay.
So he's on his way. He is off and running.
She compared this to the sex abuse scandals. She said, this is something she just tweeted. Four of the worst sex abuse scandals in U.S. history, Jerry Sandusky at Penn State, Larry Nassar at Michigan State, Richard Strauss at OSU, and Robert Anderson at Michigan, all that evil, all on Big Ten campuses. Chilling. Today is about an awful conference-wide sports decision. Huh.
So that's,
I guess,
her
referencing, I don't know, or saying it's different but also awful.
That's her basically saying, no, I'm aware of all these sex scandals, but those were just four of the schools, okay? That was four of our flagship programs being despicable and allowing terrible things to happen to people. This was all 14 schools in the conference coming together saying we want to play football, and that was a conference-wide decision. Choose your fighter, David Hookstead, greater than sign, still Team 6, or Christine, what's her last name?
Brennan.
Christine Brennan, football, worse than sex abuse.
Some hot takes coming out this morning.
Well, it's funny because you have to have it because, I mean, you had a lot of the media is from kind of Big Ten country. I mean, there's Missouri, but they don't associate themselves as SEC Missouri. They associate themselves as, you know, Missouri of the Big 12 that is kind of be able to disconnect themselves because Missouri, you know, one of the better journalism schools.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have like Northwestern, and then you have some other big time journalism programs in the Big Ten, and they all laughed at all the rednecks in the South. And how irresponsible it was to play football. And now they are having to, A, they had to deal with their Saturdays of not getting their football. Like, they had to realize that they were not the leaders or the legends of this situation. They were simply just running around with the Pac-12. And at some point, they had to stop and look around and say, wait, is this the ally we want? The Pac-12? Like, hey, come on, guys. Let's go. Let's rally. And then everyone else is like, nah. And you just look around, it's the Pac-12. You're like, oh, we've made a big mistake.
Yeah.
What have we done? Oof. Our biggest ally is the Pac-12. So they missed football.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have to see their schools bend the knee and acknowledge that, A, the virus maybe not as bad as they all thought, and B, the risk and the lost revenue, the lost money, the embarrassment, the potential long-lasting effects of not playing football. When you look at recruiting, and you look at money, and you look at layoffs and furloughs and all that stuff, and I realize layoffs and furloughs kind of the same thing, but you get the picture. So now they're having to defend their schools and their institution and their conference that they deem to be so morally superior, and yet here they are saying, you know what, we're not a leader. We're not a legend. We're going to play football too, just like a month after the SEC. Our bad. We should have been doing that all the time, the whole time. Whoops. Just one more time. I just got to read David's tweet one more time.
The hero we don't deserve.
I spent the last 188 days fighting to save Big Ten football. Today we accomplished the mission. Much like the Osama bin Laden raid or D-Day, you never know when your number will be called to serve. All you hope for is to execute your job and the mission. We did just that.
Ooh, David. He's got me tearing up over here.
Thank you for your service. I hope that now on Veterans Day, you get your free meal. You get your free meal when you go to your local establishment and they ask, have you served? And you say,
yes.
Yes. And they say, what war was that? And you say, the war on football. From the Corona Bros. Stay with us. This is Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. Welcome back to the White Claw Studios. Pick you up a 12-pack of White Claw. Support the people who support us. Ditch that beer belly bloat. 8 delicious flavors to choose from. Which basketball game do you guys want to start with last night? Both of them were severely, highly entertaining. Like I enjoyed both of them immensely as we... Hey, and you said that's the most basketball you've ever watched in one night? Most NBA basketball you've ever watched in one night?
Yeah, probably. I watched both games start to finish. So.
Wow.
Usually just kind of like a one-game kind of guy.
Okay. Congratulations to your Miami Heat.
Thank you.
Hayden did that thing again that he's been doing lately where he texts me prematurely. This time it was the opposite way.
Ooh.
This time it was about, wow, look at the big brain on me. Told you guys the Heat would win unless Marcus Smart played really well. And I was like, as Marcus Smart was just draining threes and like the Celtics were up like 8 and Smart had like 20. So I think at that point Hayden was calling for the Celtics win and then his Heat came back because of course they did. Those guys don't quit. When they're down 10 points in the fourth quarter, you knew that like, hey, they're just a couple shots away from being back into it. And they did just that. I hate how much I like the Kentucky players on that team, but man, I like the Kentucky players on that team. Tyler Hero, no one's really going to talk about the shot he hit to get them from 5-2, but that might have been the second biggest shot of the game for the Heat, or maybe the third, I guess, since Butler made history. I think Butler was the first player, was it since 97, to have two go-ahead buckets in the last 24 seconds of the fourth quarter or overtime.
Jeez.
He had two daggers. I've been telling you, Jimmy Butler, alpha of the Eastern Conference, and he proved it again last night. He proved it again last night. That shot, I mean, really the three-pointer he hit that put them up one, that should have been it. The refs can't fall for that flop by Marcus Smart. They can't fall for that, especially when it's one shot, especially when you're going to give them one free throw and the last shot. Like, that is a huge, huge foul to call. Credit to Marcus Smart for drawing it, I guess, but Jimmy Butler's three in the corner should have been the game winner. But the Celtics got rewarded with a flop and hit a free throw to tie it and send it into overtime. And then Jimmy Butler had to do it again at the end of overtime where down one, he just said, okay, saddle up Jason Tatum. We're going for a ride to the basket and there's nothing you can do about it. He draws a foul. He hits the free throw. They go up two. Which then set up, I mean, at the time I called it the greatest defensive play I've ever seen. the greatest block I've ever seen. There was a little bit of blowback of people saying, hey, LeBron's block of Andre Iguodala was still better in the finals, Game 7. Higher stakes, obviously, Game 7 of the finals. You know, LeBron's legacy. You look at Cleveland's championship drought. You look at the 73-win Warriors. That's fine, and the moment did make it bigger. You are correct. But that was LeBron timing up something perfectly from behind when Iguodala didn't see him coming. Last night was mano-a-mano, rising superstar versus rising superstar. And that's right, I called Bam a rising superstar because that guy's a stud.
Yeah.
And that was, hey, you're going to the rim. And
there.
Bam saying, okay, don't meet me there, beat me there. And boom, he couldn't do it. The wrist bending all the way back and then just snapping to flip the ball off. The greatest defensive play I've ever seen in the NBA. At any level of basketball.
Yeah, that was unreal.
It made me audibly shriek while watching it. It was one of those where you just go, ooh-hoo! And I've done that 3 more times since watching the replay. I've watched the replay over 50 times because I can't get enough of it. And down that stretch, like I said, Jimmy Butler, the alpha of the East, just came up with big play after big play. Bam came up with big defensive plays. You had Tyler Hero doing I don't even know who to compare him to. I mean, last night, I mean, I didn't see this coming for Hero. I thought in the NBA, especially the first couple years, he would just be someone you hope can run off some screens and hit some threes.
Yeah.
But last night, my man had 12 points, 11 rebounds, and 9 assists. Like, he was out there with a complete game, like looking like a
little bit of everything.
Yeah, just doing everything on the floor in crunch time, playing 40 minutes, like as a rookie. That he continues to take Duncan Robinson's minutes, who is kind of struggling and isn't really knocking down his shots and can't do much else. But Tyler Hero
was hitting the big shots.
Like I said, that three he hit with someone draped on him, down 5 of the minute left. That was the third biggest shot of the game.
Yeah,
and he shot it with no hesitation early in the clock to give them a chance to come back and take that lead in regulation. And on the Celtics side, I'm like, hey man, like we're starting to notice a trend here. You guys aren't really good at closing out these games. Like they won Game 7. I'll give them credit for that. Like they won Game 7. What was it, 1 overtime? Did it go into overtime in Game 7? Didn't get into overtime in Game 7?
I don't think so.
Oh no, it didn't. It almost did, but it did not. But they blew the double over. It's a double overtime in Game 6, I guess. Mm-hmm. They blew that one. They couldn't close out Game 3 with 0.5 seconds left. And then last night, up 10 with 8 minutes left, they couldn't close the Heat out last night. And you look around, and Jason Tatum didn't score the last 7 minutes of regulation. Or he didn't hit a field goal. He had a free throw. And he had 2 free throws in overtime. But he didn't have a field goal the last 12 minutes of the game. A full quarter. Oof. Including he tried a step back 3 with the game tied at the end of regulation, where I'm like, hey, bro, like go to the rim. I get that you want to shoot as time expires, but, like, go to the rim. Last night, though, at the end of overtime, he was like, hey, I'm not making the same mistake. I'm not settling for the step back 3 here. I'm going to the rim. And I was like, hey, man, maybe just shoot that 3.
Yeah.
Shoot that pull up. Like, maybe don't attack Bam at the rim because you went up to the 7th floor, but Bam got to the 8th.
It did not work out too well.
Now, I will say if Jason Tatum would have flushed that, that would have been one of the best offensive plays ever.
Yeah.
But, as they say, history is written by the winners. So we are now riding that Jason Tatum is a choke artist. And Kemba, buddy, you ain't much better. Kemba continues to struggle, man. Kemba, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Really the entire playoffs. I mean, Kemba has been really bad.
I thought he played well down the stretch, though. At the end of the fourth quarter in overtime.
I mean, he hit a couple shots. I wouldn't say he played well, but he did come up with a couple clutch baskets, which that's what Kemba's going to try to do, right? Like, he has in his mind that he's the closer, so, like, he'll get there and try to get to, like, he hit the one shot with, I think, with, like, a minute and a half left that put them up 5.
His signature step-back shot.
Yeah. He hit that one to put them up 5, and then Hero immediately came down and hit the 3, and then the next possession, he tried again, and Jay Crowder blocked him.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to do that same little move, except it wasn't, like, the step-back free-throw line jumper. He kind of got to the side. And Crowder blocked it, and they got a shot clock violation. So, like, he did okay. Which, to me, if I'm Jason Tatum, I'm like, hey, Kemba, like, give me the ball. Which Tatum didn't want it. Which is, you know, something that, you know, if you hadn't made any buckets, I guess you don't want the shots. I understand that. But, like, Kemba Walker, you said he played well down the stretch. He did do a couple things, but, you know, historically, this goes back to just like a history lesson as well. And it was something that I said whenever the Celtics signed Kemba. I was like, I hope they're not signing him to be the best player because we don't really have a long history. And you see it with Kyrie Irving with the Celtics. You see it with Kyrie Irving whenever he was trying to do whatever he was doing in Brooklyn this year. You don't have success when your best player is under 6 foot. Like when your go-to player is 6 foot. Like there's a reason Chris Paul didn't make the conference finals for so long, right?
Yeah.
Like we really only have two guys in history that have ever succeeded as the best player on the team when you're under like 6'2". Allen Iverson had the 1 year where he drug that team to the finals, but it was really just 1 year. And there's a whole lot of 40% shooting performances on that way, and like the league was at like an all-time low, I think, in like the early 2000s. I think that was the worst the league has ever been, at least since like the cocaine era of the 70s. He did it, and then Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas is the only guy like that's like around 6 foot to go and carry a team to a championship. He did it twice. Like Isaiah's really the only one that's done that, and that's one of the reasons I think we severely underrate Isaiah when we look at the all-time standings. Like he's a dog.
Yeah.
But you saw that with Kemba last night. You've seen it with Kemba in the playoffs, which he hasn't been the best player. Obviously, Tatum has taken that step, so like that's why I think the Celtics' ceiling has been higher. And that's why they're in the conference finals when I wouldn't have thought they would have been. I thought that team was going to be a 5 or 6 seed this year. But Tatum took a leap, and Tatum has been really good this year. And Tatum, I don't want to like be unfair to him. He was really good last night for 3 quarters. Mm-hmm. He still finished with 30 points, 14 rebounds, and 5 assists. Like had some steals, had some blocks. Like he played a good game, so I don't want to like bury him. But when it was nut up or shut up time, he got real quiet. He got real quiet when it was nut up or shut up time. He disappeared the last 12 minutes of that game. One note about Kemba as we're talking about him.
Mm-hmm.
Last 11 quarters. So I don't know if that's counting overtime as a quarter or what. It just says last 11 quarters. 8 for 36 from the field. Mm-hmm. 22.2% from the field. 2 of 18 from 3. That's 11%. And has missed 25 of his last 23 three-point attempts. 25 of his last 29 three-point attempts. Excuse me. 25 of his last 29 three-point attempts.
That doesn't sound super good.
No. No, it doesn't.
Oof.
And, like, they need him to be that closer until Tatum. Because Tatum was trying at times last night. He was just missing shots. Like, they were up 6, and he airballed that 3 really badly. He had another bad turnover. I don't think the Celtics can win this series if Marcus Smart's their second-best player. And that's, like, no disrespect to Marcus Smart. He has been awesome in these playoffs, and he was awesome last night. I don't think they can win if he's their second-best player, though. Not against this Heat team, at least, because this Heat team, like I've said all playoffs long, this Heat team's got dogs. And last night, again, you had 4 guys in that starting lineup have at least 18 points. They're balanced. And they're tough. And then you add, you know, Hero off the bench with 12. So they had 5 guys in double figures. But like I said, 4 guys with at least 18. Jimmy got his 20. Jay Crowder, I don't know what the hell's gotten into Jay Crowder, but he is single-handedly trying to prove that the Celtics lost that Kyrie Irving trade.
Yeah.
Because when they traded for Kyrie, they gave up that pick. They ended up being number 8, and it was Colin Sexton. That's not a big deal. But they gave up Jay Crowder, too. And Jay Crowder's trying to prove, like, hey, you lost that Kyrie trade. Those 2 years of Kyrie were really not that good.
Yep.
Kyrie was kind of a disaster, but you also gave up me, and I'm going to make you pay for it right now because he was hitting clutch shot after clutch shot last night too, including the 3 that put them up in overtime. He finished with 22, and then there's another performance by Goran Dragic where, I mean, this guy's been, I don't want to call him remarkable, but like compared to like what I thought he was.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a bench guy. He was behind Kendrick Nunn for a lot of this year. Like, and now he is like their second best player or third best player. He's their third guy in the big 3 behind Butler and Bam.
I mean, like in the first half when they were struggling, he was like, all right, I'll just do it myself. Well, they started taking over.
Well, Cam, that's the other thing about Kemba. Kemba is getting abused on defense. And you saw it with Kyle Lowry. You saw it with Fred VanVleet. Like, they did it with the Raptors. Whoever Kemba was guarding was getting sought out. And last night, you saw it too. Like, hey, let's get Kemba switched on to Dragic. Let's try to get Kemba on Butler. And if it is, attack, attack, attack. He can't guard anybody. That's another problem when you're under 6 foot.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what they do to fix that other than just like, hey, play better. Like, hit shots, Kemba. Like, it'll help if you'll make some threes, but like he's in a long funk. I was surprised they didn't play Grant Williams more. He got 10 minutes. He got in and crunched them again. He hit a big three that helped get them up from 6-9. Like, he helped try to push that lead. I thought maybe they'd try him on Bam a little bit more. Now, I will say in the 10 minutes, he fouled three times. So, like, he just couldn't really stay in front of Bam. I thought that game was awesome. I think that series is going to be awesome. And like I said, it gave us some real clutch moments. And it seems like more times than not, the Heat are coming up big in these clutch moments. Like, they're now, what, 9-1 in the playoffs?
Yeah, 9-1 or 9-2 in overtime as well this season.
9-2 in overtime, is that right?
I think that's what it is, yeah. I think they were 8-2 going into last night.
I knew their only loss in the playoffs so far was in overtime. They were 8-1, and their one loss was in overtime to that Bucks team. And now they're 9-1. They just keep finding a way to win these games. And like I said, they went into the fourth quarter down 12 heading into the quarter. It didn't matter. They erased that lead and just kept coming and coming and coming. And that's what happens when you have a deep team full of guys who can just play and who can just fight. Either one of these teams making the finals will be fun. I think either one of these teams will be fun.
I agree.
Like I said, the Celtics are there. I'm not panicking if I'm a Celtics fan, but like I am like, hey, Kemba, going to need you to do something here. Tatum, like maybe go to the basket, Tatum. Maybe like come up big once. Because he didn't come up big in that Raptors series either. He was bad in crunch time in the Raptors series as well. That was the first game. And then the nightcap, the doubleheader, gave us one of the biggest collapses and one of the biggest underachievements in NBA history. We'll dive into that next. Let's talk sports on Fan Run Radio. I guess before we get to that Clippers collapse, we got a little bit of NFL breaking news, I guess.
Ooh.
Hayden, horn me. Cowboys linebacker Sean Lee expected to be out 6 weeks after undergoing hernia surgery last week.
Excellent.
Did he even play? I don't think I saw him on the field against the Rams, right?
He was inactive against the Rams, so
he found a way to get hurt without playing.
Yep.
Impressive.
Only Sean Lee.
Sean Lee, ladies and gentlemen.
Only Sean Lee.
Y'all got anybody in the middle there?
No, we don't. Like I said, Zeke's going to be playing linebacker Sunday, I guess.
Dirk Cutter, if you're
like
listening.
Two linebackers on the roster
who
are active.
Is it, what's his name? Scott? What's the Pollard's name?
Tony Pollard.
Make Tony earn his money. I saw they're making Tony return kicks now. Like, hey, we got to get you the ball. Like, go earn your money somehow. Put him at linebacker.
Might as well.
Put him at linebacker. So the Cowboys without Sean Lee, which is funny, they're always without Sean Lee. He is somehow always there and never there at the same time. Some more injury news, I guess, in the NFL. Just coming across since we've been on the air. 49ers placing Richard Sherman on IR. The 3-week IR. Hmm. Which, that can't be a good sign, though. I mean, Richard Sherman is old, right, when it comes to cornerback age?
Yeah, absolutely.
He is 32, so I mean, he's not old, but like he's
for a corner, that's pretty.
He's getting old in cornerback age,
and it's a calf strain too.
Especially when you're him, and you know he's coming off of an Achilles tear 2 years ago, right? So I mean, like he is someone who hasn't had a clean bill of health. Like when I'm looking at his age, it says Patrick Peterson's 30.
Yeah,
and I don't think of Patrick Peterson being old, but like I guess he is
not
too.
The
but
same.
He hasn't had the same. I guess he hasn't had, you know, there's two more years he can have. Plus, he hasn't had like a leg injury. So, a little bit more worried about Richard Sherman, who isn't necessarily the fastest guy, anyways. You know what I mean? Like his speed is not his strength. So, if he loses even more of a step, that will be an issue. But so far, been a bad start to the year for the 49ers and the Super Bowl hangover, to me, kind of continuing as Sherman went from healthy to a surprise injured reserve addition. The earliest he can return now is game 5. He played 78 of the 82 snaps, so he was out there pretty much all day against Arizona. I will say he wasn't guarding DeAndre Hopkins, as no one was guarding DeAndre Hopkins.
It was supposed to be Emmanuel Mosley. He was guarding him most of the time, or trying to guard him most of the time.
49ers play a lot of man-to-man in the secondary. They do that a lot. Because I associate Sherman as a zone corner.
Yeah, just being on one side is usually his traditional
So I didn't know if they were still doing that just as a defense or what they do, like if they're doing man or predominantly zone. It just because, like I said,
I can't remember what scheme they use.
But Mosley was on Hopkins 12 of his 15 catches every single time. So he's doing great.
Well, on one hand, like, credit to Mosley for drawing that assignment, I guess. But on the other hand, like, yeah, you gotta guard him a little better, bro. But at the same time, it's DeAndre Hopkins. What are you going to do? Like, no one's accusing Emmanuel Mosley of being a shutdown corner. He's just kind of a nice story. We're happy to see him out there thriving. Like, it's hard to go from underrated to, like, okay, now you've got to go out here and you got to guard one of the best receivers in football, if not the best receiver in football. Good luck, fam.
I guess it's better that he's given up 12 catches to, like, the best receiver in the league instead of, like, a three-star South Carolina wide receiver like he used to do.
Or, like, Christian Kirk. He didn't like Christian Kirk, Bernie. Like, Christian Kirk had 0 catches or 0 yards. He had 1 catch for 0 yards. It's okay if you get burned by Hopkins, I guess. It's all right. Better than getting burned by a no-name guy. Another injury, Cam. As we, I guess Wednesday, maybe, I guess moving forward, we should do more fantasy stuff on Tuesday since Wednesday is like kind of the waiver wire day.
Yeah.
But, you know, Wednesday, as we are sitting here, the news is bad for a lot of people's first round pick. Your boy, Mike Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Thomas, he's trying to avoid getting put on IR, right? They want to put him on IR, but he's trying to say, no, don't do it. I'm fine.
He said he's going to play this week.
He says he wants to play this week, which
play this week. Please.
If I'm the Saints, I'm like, hey, we don't have to rush him out here against the Raiders. Like, I don't think Michael Thomas is the difference between being the Raiders or not. At least that's how I would hope to feel. Either way, it's week two, and you don't want to get your guy hurt. Like, if you were 0-1, it might be a little different, but you're 1-0. You can afford to let this guy try to get healthy over the next couple weeks, I think.
Please keep doing your slant routes on that ankle right now. Please.
Well, he wants to.
I know. I hope he does. I hope they put him out there.
I think you got to protect the player here and not do it, right? Just put him on the IR and say, sorry, you're shut down for at least 3 weeks.
Yeah, they should, but
I think Michael Thomas is a little bit crazy.
Yeah, he is.
I think we've seen Nick. He's an emotional head case kind of thing. Like, he doesn't give me diva tendencies like most wide receivers, but he gives me, like, a little off, like, little crazy. Maybe a little insecure.
Oh, yeah. Big insecure.
But at the same time, I feel like, hey, A, this is why you went to get Emmanuel Sanders. Like, hey, he can be a one for a couple weeks. But also at the same time, my next thought is like, hey, maybe this could give Marquez Callaway some snaps out there at wide receiver if Thomas heads to the IR. But on, like, stage three, I'm like, I think it's good that Michael Thomas wants to try to play through the injury. I think that's what you want from a wide receiver. You want usually they get labeled as soft, so it's nice to see like a guy wanting to go out there and try to tough it out for his team. Plus, I'm sure that he wants to try to get 2,000 yards and wants. That went out the window.
Yeah,
week one.
He's not getting that.
But I mean, he's talked about trying to get that before, right? Like, hasn't he talked about trying to like set records and stuff? Like, he's on a record setting pace, right, for yards
at least
like,
on through, receptions.
Yeah, so like through his career, like he's on like a historic pace in terms of receptions. He gets a lot of yards, too, I mean, just by volume. But if I'm the Saints, I'm like, hey, you not playing. Yep. Not playing. Have you guys looked ahead to week two yet in the NFL outside of the Cowboys and Falcons?
Yeah.
Yep.
Kind of a I don't want to say boring week because it's week two of football. We don't know which teams are good or not. But, like, I don't know if I like any of these matchups, at least from a gambling perspective. Yeah. I just know there's a whole lot of, like, -7s out here. A whole lot of -5s and a lot of -7s.
Yeah, it's not. I wouldn't say it's as good as last week's for sure, because I think the early season division matchups and stuff gave last week a little pop. Like, there's still some this week.
Not as many though. We got like what Lions Packers. We got the Thursday night game. Bengals Browns is a division game. What else? I mean,
Kansas City
Panthers Bucks and Kansas City Chargers. And like usually Kansas City Chargers is a good matchup, but like Tyrod Taylor, like. I would be shocked if the Chargers could stay in that game just because I just think that Chargers offense is going to be like every Tyrod Taylor offense where you are being careful and trying to get to 20 points. And the one thing we know about the Chiefs is they're going to get to their 20 points quickly. They're going to get to their 20 points easily, especially at home. Like, you might be able to fool them on the road every now and then. They might have an off game on the road if you can control the clock and like keep them on the sidelines, but the Chargers offense isn't built for that. Who is Joshua Kelly, by the way? Who the hell is that?
He's a running back from UCLA, six-round draft pick.
Okay, because I thought he looked pretty good against the Bengals.
Yeah.
No, they said he was killing it in camp.
Yeah, so. That was if you're in a fantasy league, like I was looking at Joshua Kelly on a couple of just trying to pick him up because I do feel like he's more of a every down back than Eckler. Like yeah. I think Eckler's still a weapon, but like with the way the Chargers are going to play this year, I think they're going to use both running backs a lot, and I think he's going to get some touches. And I thought he was running pretty well.
Yeah, what I was reading like originally when I was doing my fantasy stuff was, the number two guy was going to get a decent number of carries because they do like to use Eckler as like that kind of go out catch some passes, right. Not really going to be in between the tackles the whole game.
It's kind of like what Kamara, the situation with Kamara. You can be the guy, you can still get a lot of touches, you can still be a playmaker.
That's why him and Melvin Gordon worked well together.
Right, but like last year they had Melvin Gordon and they were still wanting to use him, and because he's gone doesn't mean now they're going to be like all of a sudden, hey, Eckler, you're our bell cow now. Yeah. It's time for you to be the every down back. That's not necessarily going to be a recipe for success, especially since they already paid Eckler.
Yep.
It's not like they want to chew him up and spit him out in 1 year. They want to try to keep him fresh for the next couple of years. So that was just something I noticed.
Yeah, I messed up in some of my fantasy leagues. I had read some stuff that said Jackson was going to be the backup. And I was like, okay, he's going to get carry. So I took him in like a late round flyer. Should have went Kelly.
Yeah, but Jackson's kind of the same way as Eckler. Like
he's a smaller
like pass catching back. Like whereas Kelly looks the part of an every down guy. Or at least a first and second down guy.
Kelly and Malcolm Brown, man. Big pickups this week in fantasy for people.
Oh, yeah. I got Malcolm Brown in two of my four leagues, yeah.
Nice.
Hour one of the books. We'll kick off hour two with headlines. We'll get into that. Then we'll get into this Clippers collapse. Stick with us. This is Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.